We're going to call to order the House Committee on Human Services and Housing on Wednesday, May 15, 2013. We're going to open up an informational hearing on the Oregon Youth Challenge. Dan, let's see, Colonel Caldwell, am I saying that right?
General.
General, golly.
That's all right.
What a terrible faux pas.
Just a pay grade difference.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. With me today is my Director of the Oregon National Guard Youth Challenge Program, which is located about 9 miles east of Bend in a former DOD facility, and that is Dan Radabaugh. Dan is the Director of the Challenge Program and does an outstanding job, and I know he's already got a list of people that are going to also come up here, and I'll slide out of the way, but I know he also has a list of a movie we want to show you, a short 11-minute video, I guess. So if you're willing to let us turn down the lights, we'll kick off with that.
Want to see that first? Want to show that first? Is that what you'd like? Okay. Debbie, can you do that?
Our Youth Challenge Program is a military-style accredited high school for kids 16 to 18 years old who are considered at risk. The OYCP is administered by the Oregon Military Department with support from the National Guard Bureau, Bend-Lapine School District, and the Oregon Department of Education. Located in Bend, Oregon, and overseen by the National Guard Bureau, the Oregon National Guard Youth Challenge Program is a last chance for many young people, a last chance at getting an education, a last chance at finding out who they are before society labels them, and a last chance to turn their life around for the better. The Oregon Youth Challenge Program, or OYCP, is a 17-month commitment that can transform lives.
Youth Challenge is a non-traditional educational program that's like no other program in the nation. The most important criteria that we look for in the cadets coming to our program is that they are high school dropouts, they're 16 to 18 years of age, they're not on parole or probation, they're non-adjudicated, and they're citizens of Oregon and the United States.
They need to understand in their own self that it's important that they change. The path they're on is not delivering what they visualize as a future. If they're willing to do that and they're willing to admit that it's time for me to change and I need something that's different than what I've been accustomed to, then this program will help them greatly.
I was a gangbanger, and I was a lot of assault, some spray painting, you know, drugs, just things like that.
Kevin had problems socializing in school, and that affected his educational part. I hope he learns a lot more responsibility. He's always been competitive, and he just needs to focus and other things.
I got in too much fights. I argued back with my parents, not my parents, but people, and I was rude.
Stevie, she wants to complete her high school, and she doesn't want to really get a GED. She wants to get a diploma.
We care about her and love her. We're not being mean to her. You know, we're just trying to guide her through it. You know, show her the right things in life so she won't go into alcoholism or drugs.
A lot of family problems caused from school, and I ended up dropping out. My grades weren't so good.
He really wants his high school diploma now, and this is a one-time opportunity for him to be able to make it.
OYCP is not always easy. It's not always fun. It takes hard work and dedication, but it works. It offers opportunities for personal growth, self-improvement, and academic achievement. Since 1995, it's helped over 3,000 Oregon youth find discipline and focus while helping them discover just exactly what they're capable of. All of this starts in an intense two-week phase of the program called pre-challenge.
That 2 weeks is basically used to figure out who wants to be here and who wants to stay strong and make a commitment to their lives.
I've learned how to be a leader and to step out and ask questions and not be so shy.
It was hard. Teamwork is with 30 girls.
The first 2 days I wasn't so sure. I did feel like leaving. Actually, busted into tears like the seventh day. You know, I was just getting in trouble for everybody's actions, and it didn't feel good. I learned a lot of respect, every sentence, you know, you end with sir, yes sir, you start it, yes ma'am, you mess up and you have to pay big time.
Once candidates have graduated from pre-challenge, the real work begins. As cadets, they will begin the 20-week phase of education, training, and community service. While at OYCP, cadets are immersed in 8 core components that make up the curriculum, the first of which is academic excellence.
Having the cadets working in small groups at OYCP, they develop ways to solve issues that they came in with, whether it be anger, whether it would be parent problems, whether it be peer pressure, whether it be academic problems at school. They learn how to deal with these problems and become successful through the program. Once the kids have reached what we feel is at a point where they're excelling through the program, we will pull those kids out and we will give them responsibility of becoming academic tutors. So it's an all-around education. They learn academics and they're learning social skills and to become a good member of society.
Since OYCP is an accredited high school, cadets have a chance to earn their high school diploma. They can also choose to earn their GED or up to 8 credits that they can use to rejoin their original high school.
At the Oregon Youth Challenge program, we average a 1.8 grade level increase with our students, and that varies depending on the cadets coming through our door. But typically, 60% of the kids coming to us are at the 6th grade level in math, reading, and language. Our goal over the 20-week period that we have them is for them to increase 2 grade levels. However, any increase is significant.
In addition to in-depth academic instruction, all cadets are put through rigorous physical fitness training while at OYCP.
Physical training is done 7 days a week. As far as confidence goes, I mean, it makes them feel like they can capture even bigger things later on in life.
I lost 71 pounds from the Youth Challenge over the physical training part, and now that I'm graduated and lost 71 pounds, I could feel like I can do anything that anybody else can do, and that's why I'm here right now. And I don't think if I didn't go to Youth Challenge program, I don't think I'd be on the football team because of my grades and because of the physical shape I was in.
I never did this much stuff in like one day. My biggest achievement is like I've been studying and turning my work in on time and not talking in class. That's what gets me. Yeah, that's how I get my work done, is not talking.
My hardest task was holding my anger in and releasing it in a form of writing or just expressing myself when the time was right and the time was appropriate. These people that are so proud of me every day, my mentor, my family, my girlfriend, they all tell me how proud they are of me from doing better in my life.
My biggest challenge, I think, will be completing all my packets. They're getting harder, but I'm trying to keep up there with them.
Oregon Youth Challenge Program is designed to bring out the best qualities in each cadet. During their 20-week stay, cadets are given opportunities to be leaders.
We put them in a leadership role, especially with our platoon model, where we try to put every cadet through a leadership role, whether it be squad leader or a team leader. They basically build a greater confidence. They build more assertiveness, trying to accomplish things, and basically it opens them up to approach people more.
Many graduates from OYCP will be headed into the job market once they've graduated. Job skills training and education play a crucial role in forming a complete cadet at OYCP. All cadets learn how to complete a job application, create a polished resume, and hone their interviewing skills in mock interviews. Learning to be a part of something bigger than yourself is vital to character development for OYCP cadets. Each cadet completes a minimum of 80 hours of community service. Through these opportunities, cadets have the chance to plan the work, prepare for it, and feel the accomplishment of a job well done. The Oregon National Guard Youth Challenge Program strives to make a difference in the life of each cadet. Cadets learn that they can do more than they ever thought, and that their goals are attainable.
When the cadets graduate from our program, they have another 12 months of mentoring. And what we have found is after the 20-week intense residential phase that they need an adult role model in their lives as they transition back into their local communities. During the 12-month mentoring phase, they will be working with their mentors on the plan that they developed while at Youth Challenge. This plan could include going into the military, employment,
going back to college, or taking the credits they earned at Youth Challenge and going back to their high school. The beauty of the Oregon National Guard Youth Challenge program is that we are an accredited high school. We serve the entire state, and every cadet that graduates walk away from the program with something. They either have credits to return to high school, they have a GED, or they have a diploma.
What I've learned here has definitely changed my life in many ways. I'm more closer to my family, closer than I'd ever be, and my friends look up to me, and I'm kind of like an inspiration. I'm doing credits, and I'm going back to high school to graduate with my class, and it feels good.
The Oregon Youth Challenge changed me. I have better grades. I'm healthier now, and I got my high school diploma. I hear I'm going to enlist in the Marine Corps. Makes me feel weird because nobody's ever been proud of me before. Yeah.
I've made the honor roll with a 3.9 grade point average. And my old grade point average is 0.2, I think. And it's because I was always skipping school and I'm just never going. I've gotten mostly all the award ribbons that you can get. I'm also on the drill team. I've got the top PT out of my whole platoon. I got that every single time. I'm going back to high school. That's good.
The biggest difference is confidence. You know, and we've set down goals and that he wants to achieve, and he's on the right track. It's good. Good to go.
She's more willing to learn now in school than she was. I think the one more one-on-one basis with the teacher and a student really helped her out, you know, because sometimes you get lost in class and if you don't understand and if there's too many, you won't ask.
Well, now that he's completed the program, he's so much more mature, so much more grown. He's got goals, and you know, this is what this was about. So we're very proud of him.
I recommend the Youth Challenge program for any kid. And any shape, any size, any color, it doesn't matter. You're all the same person when you get there. And I think anybody can do it if I can do it.
Well, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, that's the advertisement, but it is actually a pretty good overview of the program. I know Dan's got some items to make, and then I'm going to scoot, with your indulgence, I'll scoot down the hall and catch another bill that I have up. But I want to make a couple points. As was mentioned in the film, that we're an alternative high school for the Bendel Pine school system. And the kids, all tests that they get, they have to achieve 80%, or they go back and get it, do it again until they get it right, which is some of the reason why these young people come out with such good grade points. I think Dan may be stealing his thunder here, but we invite 156 cadets twice a year. We graduate 130 plus. It's voluntary. Most of the young men and women who leave in the first 2 weeks, because that is getting them used to living in our facility, going to high school our way. And it's not anything scientific. It's just good discipline and lots of attention. And I think we've learned over the years, we started it in 1993, and we learned over the years that without a solid mentor and a good plan coming out, that the kids will not be successful. So we emphasize that very heavily. We put a lot of resources toward it. Last thing I'll say is that this is funded 75% by the federal government, 25% by the state. Average daily membership, since we are a certified alternative high school, makes up the bulk of that, but the general fund supports it for about $250,000 a biennium. So that's kind of my top five or six, and then I'm going to scoot out of here and let you get to talk to the people that are doing it more than I am.
Thank you so much, Senator.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, with what the general said in the video, he's covered about everything. We are a national program. We are one of 34 programs in the nation. Youth Challenge is designed to be an early intervention to help youth who are behind in their education get back on track. We serve 16 to 18-year-old boys and girls who are high school dropouts or those who don't have the potential to graduate high school. We simply provide the opportunity for the cadets to change. We put them into a quasi-military environment, and through the discipline and the structure and the eight core components, which is the Youth Challenge Program, they change and evolve themselves. It's not like they're forced to do anything. It's a voluntary program. They can leave anytime they would like to. With the video said there, we are at the alternative high school, so the cadets, they have the opportunity to earn a high school diploma, a GED, or eight high school credits, and then return to their hometown high schools, hopefully on track to graduate and become taxpaying citizens for the state of Oregon and productive members of society. Hopefully, with the education they receive, they won't be reliant on public assistance or possibly going into the correction system. Ben Lapine School District is our host district. Our average daily match does go through the school, and they take 20% for some administrative fees and give us the remaining 80%. That, accompanied with the National School Lunch Program and the $100,000 of general fund each year, is how we pay for the program. The program's cost-free to the families and the students who attend. They do need to supply health and hygiene products, undergarments, and footwear. We supply everything else.
Dan, could you identify yourself for the record, please? Ask you to do that earlier.
Dan Radebois, Director of the Oregon National Guard Youth Challenge Program.
Thank you.
Okay. We are a statewide program. We can take cadets from all 36 counties. And the program is broke down into two phases. The residential phase, where the eight core components are taught to the students, and the eight core components are academic excellence, physical fitness, leadership followership, job skills, life coping skills, service to community, responsible citizenship, and health and hygiene. The cadets are tested and they meet certain tasks at certain times in the program. They're graded every day on the eight core components, and they must pass the requirements in order to graduate the residential phase. Once they do graduate from the residential, they go into a 12-month mentoring phase where they work with a mentor from their hometowns to continue on the right path to work on educational needs, housing needs, and take positive steps towards the career of their choice. These mentors are required to call back and report into the program each month, and we have an 80 to 85% success rate with getting these mentors to call back, so we can track those cadets. So there's 15 or 20% of the cadet population, the graduates, we don't know where they are or where they go. That doesn't mean they're not successful. It just means that they haven't reported in. And like the general said, we have 156 cadets per class, two classes a year. That's maximum capacity for the program. Mm-hmm. That's maxes out our infrastructure and the amount of beds that we do have. The target graduation in order to receive federal funding is 120 cadets. We have met or exceeded that goal for the past 10 years. We have a advisory board who do fundraisers, and the money that they earn, it goes towards scholarships. It goes into a 501c3, and we distribute $10,000 to $12,000 in scholarships each class. So that's a quick snapshot of Youth Challenge.
The scholarships are for college then? Is that what the scholarships are for? Great,
yes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair. For continued education.
Thank you. One more question. So how do you find your mentors in each community?
The mentors are, it's the responsibility of the applicant to submit two mentors, okay? Because we find that friendly matches, a mentor is going to be a lasting relationship, other than some, if we assign someone to them. We're required to do sex offender checks and law enforcement data check on them to make sure they are upstanding citizens. And we have two for each cadet, and then once the background checks are completed, the cadet gets to choose which one they'd like. They become the primary. The other one waits in the wings in case something should happen.
Great, thank you. Representative Wisdom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm real honored to have this facility in my district. Dan does a great job, and all of his people over there, the general. He didn't mention the national recognition that the Oregon Youth Challenge has received several years. I think also the great thing is, like he said, you know, these are at-risk kids. They have to ask to come, and their parents have to agree that they come. And to graduate 130 of roughly of 150 at-risk kids is a great savings for society and makes our community safer and better for their success. I think one of the great programs is their volunteerism that they require of their cadets. They do a lot of volunteerism through the program that they're required to do, and I think we should require that of all of our high school graduates or students. One of the graduates has kept me periodically, sends me an email and tells me how her life's going and how she's better for the program. But really great program. One of the things they do with the cadets is they have to have a baby for the day, or for a period of time they have to have a baby, so they learn.
We have three platoons, and each platoon gets two robotic babies who stay with them for 4 days. They keep them up all night. They have to feed them and change them, and they realize what it's like to be a parent, and they do all this through the Deschutes County Health Department.
Good job.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I could either say this now or after the next testimony, but I think the proof is really in the pudding, and I've been very honored to have Patrick Stupfel as my LA here, a graduate of your program, and he is way more mature than normal 20, 21-year-olds that I come across all the time since I have kids in that age range, too. So clearly it's just a fantastic program, and I'm very grateful for the blessing I received from it.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. We may pull you up again.
Okay.
If we have more questions. So, Patrick, you're going to come and talk with us? And your mom, Kate? Thank you for coming today, both of you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Patrick Stupfel, and as everyone else has said before, I used to be a high school dropout. So I was 18 years old in 2010, and I had 5 high school credits. I went to 13 different schools from my kindergarten through 12th grade, all different kinds of schools, private Catholic, charter, alternative. And one of the things I learned from that is not every single kind of school works for every single kind of student. And I think this program is one of those safety nets for students like me who weren't necessarily criminals, but just got mixed up in the wrong kind of thing. And it grabbed me, it took me in, and it pretty much taught me everything I needed to know today to be successful. So that's my path before OYCP. And when I was in the program, I made it my life's goal to do everything that I could do to be successful. And the program taught me everything from leadership to community service, academic excellence, the whole nine yards. And I had a renewed self-discipline and a return to my school district in 2011. So graduated OYCP in December 2010. And once I got back to my school district, I wanted to get involved as much as possible to help kids that I knew, such as my old friends. And I became my student body president of my high school. And Superintendent Carol Smith of Portland Public Schools offered me a position on the Students Advisory Committee. So I actually had her ear, as well as a bunch of other students from the whole school district. And from there, I actually got involved with 5 other committees, such as the Long Range Facilities Advisory Committee and the Portland Public Schools Budget Review Committee. So I got myself involved in tons of stuff, dove into the weeds, because I really wanted to not only be successful, but learn how I can actually help my community in a professional manner. So, and And the mentor phase, I believe, is one of the best parts of the program because it actually makes sure that you stay on track. And I graduated in 2012 from Alliance High School in Benson. And although it was a year after the contract was up for my mentor, I'm still good friends with him. He fulfilled his promise to me that he would be at my high school graduation. He was there to cheer me on. So one of my last pieces that I really want to tell all of you is that during the legislative session, everyone knows that everyone's fighting for the piece of the pie that's not there. That's the truth of the matter. But this program really is a lifesaver. And it touches the lives of every single youth. Well, not every single youth, excuse me. It touches the lives of youth across every single legislative district in the state of Oregon. So that's pretty much all I have to say, and thank you.
Patrick, how did you make that decision to go there and stay there?
Well, it was my grandfather, frankly. He was a colonel in the Army and a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And I had always had the idea of going to military school, even since I was little, because it was cool to me. But it wasn't until my darkest hour when I really needed it that the program presented itself to me. And once I was there, I just made it my life's goal to stay there because I knew the benefits of it, and I knew what I could go back to was not good if I failed.
How was it presented to you? How did you even know about the program?
My mother and my vice principal, Lavert Robertson, at Franklin High School brought the program up to me. And at first I was very against it because me and my vice principal at the time weren't really agreeing on much. But
I had to bribe him to get in the car.
Yeah. So eventually I just made the choice because I knew that I wasn't really succeeding.
And how did you choose your mentors?
That was actually tricky because I didn't really know many professionals in the community, didn't really have many family friends that were stepping forward. So I asked my mom if she knew any professionals that would not only be a mentor, but a professional mentor. So she got her her friend, Bruce Seiler, who's an accountant, to pretty much help me out.
Great. Any other questions of Patrick? So, Mom, tell us your story.
My name is Kelly Fitzpatrick, and I'm a nationally certified alcohol and drug counselor, level 2. I'm also a qualified mental health associate from Multnomah County. I have worked long-term with people who are chronically homeless with severe and persistent mental illness, and this is my Department of Corrections volunteer ID doing volunteer transition services for 6 years, helping men coming out of the prison system. A little background on my family, how we ended up here. I'm a multi-generational military brat. My father was in 3 wars. He went off to war in the Philippines at age 16. He has dementia because he had an injury in his frontal lobe, and at 90 years old, he remembers that he loves us, and that's about it. He is deaf because he had a gun go off next to his ear. He has PTSD because he was in 3 wars. When I was in the early 60s, we were supposed to go to Laos for 10 years. My grandfather talked my father out of doing that. We were going to live on a banana plantation, and we all know what was going on in Laos in those days. My father told me there's nobody who hates war more than a soldier. And I moved so far away from the family that I had. I moved to Oregon 27 years ago. I became an anti-draft counselor when the draft came on. I did not want my children to ever join the military. I didn't want my children to go through what my father had gone through. And when I lost my children, I lost them twice. First of all, without going into any horrific details that would be embarrassing to my family, through no fault of mine or my son, I lost custody of my children. And I lost them in a pretty horrific way, the way a lot of parents in Oregon do. I had to call the police, and I was taken for my own safety out of my own home at gunpoint, police gunpoint. One of my children told me, "Mom, you didn't save me." And I spent many years trying to rebuild my life. And I told my children, I cannot save you, but I can teach you how to save yourselves. I kept myself really busy, and I tried to stay available to my kids as much as possible. My youngest child in 3rd grade told his aftercare teacher to fuck off, excuse my language. And he got on three buses and he went and hid at somebody's house and became a chronic truant starting in third grade. And I lost that child the second time to the streets of Portland, Oregon. And he became a Southeast Portland skater kid, out all night long on skateboards, going from Hillsboro to Gresham on a skateboard in the middle of the night. One day he called me and he said, Mom, I broke my brain. Come get me. And I spent a month working with my own child. And luckily his brain was not broken permanently. And he had a spiritual awakening of some sort where he looked at the ceiling and he said, I don't know how I ended up in this point in my life. I was not supposed to be on this path. And he asked for help. And he was severely paranoid. By the time I bribed him and got him into that car to the OYCP orientation, he was so paranoid. He refused to sign any papers saying that he was even there interested because he thought that I was tricking him into joining the military and he was going to go off to war. That's how paranoid my child was at that point. And I saw other kids going through that same sort of situation in their minds when they went to that orientation. And they did not want to be there because they thought that they were going to have to join the military. But what happened was my son got his mind back. He got his soul back. And our family got a family member back that was lost forever, we thought. I had people in my life telling me to write my son off and walk away, that he was gone. Luckily, I happen to believe that everyone is valuable, and I didn't give up on my own son. And when he called me for help, I knew what to do and I knew how to help him. And that meant swallowing my pride and getting him into a military school that I wasn't sure about. And those people ended up being the best people in the world for my family. And they saved my son's life, and they save children's lives every day. And they turn away lots and lots of children for a couple of reasons. Because they don't have enough space, they don't have enough resources, and some of those kids don't have anybody to buy the supplies to get them into that school. And some of those kids don't have any adults in their lives that are willing to be their mentors. And so those kids, some of his friends, are still out on the streets. Some of those friends are incarcerated in the prison that I go and volunteer in, I'm sure. Some of those kids are now professional gangsters selling drugs on the streets to other people's children. And my son is not. My son is here and he's alive and he's part of our family again and he's giving back to the world, the community, because of OYCP. They saved my son's life and I will do anything, go anywhere to tell anybody that OYCP saved my son's life. And because we come from generations of service, my son has that generationally in his spirit, and he is giving back to the community rather than taking from the community. And I ask you, whatever you can do, whenever OYCP comes up, please remember our family's story and ask what you can to help them expand to save other children's lives, because otherwise we are going to have more people incarcerated and more people out there causing trouble when there's a chance to save their lives. Regardless of politics, regardless of geographic area where they live in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm assuming then, as part of the story, you went to the school and you talked with the vice principal that Patrick mentioned. Is that how you knew about the Oregon Youth Challenge Program?
I found out about it accidentally online. And then I tried to get my son interested a few years before he got desperate enough to say, yes, I'll check it out. And then when he was kicked out of his last and final school, the vice principal said, the only chance that your child has is to get him to OYCP. And there were many people who fought my son and tried to sabotage his path there. And somehow he decided to go.
Great choice, Patrick.
Yeah.
Any questions? Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for sharing this inspiring success story with us. Patrick, help me understand, not your own experience, but the people that you shared this experience with, how young men who have problems with responsibility and commitment react to a system that demands both of them so suddenly. Tell me about that experience and that and the changes or the experience that these young men encounter there.
I think the real key point is before they even get to the program, and that's what I love most about it, is it's a volunteer program. Mm-hmm. Students have already made the decision that they're on the wrong path, and they want to make their lives better. So once they get there, within the first 2 weeks, it's highly intensive. They call it red phase, and that's when you weed out the ones that are going to quit and the ones that are in it for the long haul. And I guess the main thing is camaraderie and knowing that you're all in it together, mm-hmm. brotherhood, knowing that we've all hit rock bottom, and we all want that success so that we're willing to do whatever it takes to make the platoon and everyone there succeed as a whole.
They put an external skeleton around them until they can grow that their own self-discipline.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Thank you both for coming, and I agree, what a great story. Patrick, it's not that I don't believe your mother, but it's hard for me to know that she's talking about you with the presentation that you've made here this afternoon. So thank you for being here. I guess one quick question, now that you've been in this environment, in this building, and observed us, do you have any favorite legislators that you'd like to?
Well, for the record, I'm an independent, so I look at the issues and not the person, the policies. So
takes after his mother.
Pretty much if there's a good issue, I'll like you for a second, but if you make a bad decision, then, well, we'll see.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, which district are you in?
You can see I have to always be on my best behavior. No free pass.
Any further
questions?
But
we must say that Alyssa Kinney-Geyer is our favorite.
Yes.
We have to admit to favorites.
And see why. Any further questions? Thank you both so much. And best of luck to you, Patrick. Yeah, we're happy to see you. I walk by that office every day, several times a day, and it's nice to see you there.
Yep.
So thank you. Thank you both for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the time. Have a great day.
Thank you. So now we have Kate Baker and Tyler Brewer. If you would just give us your name before you speak, that would be great.
Sure, my name's Kate Baker.
Just go ahead and give, if you're going to speak first, or is he going to speak first?
I will.
Okay, go ahead, Kate.
So first of all, thank you, representatives, for allowing us to come and speak to you. It really does mean a lot. I probably will need the tissue.
What's it there for?
Our story is a little bit different, but very similar. Tyler has struggled since third grade. He has extremely severe ADHD, and learning how to learn was just something that he really just didn't get. And from about third grade on, he has heard teacher after teacher in every single progress report and report card tell him that he's dumb. He doesn't get it. He's not able to do the work. And basically that he wasn't smart. I knew different. And there wasn't anything else for us. So we went through the public school route, and he just struggled. And I think when he went into OYCP, he maybe had a credit as a end-of-the-year junior. So for us, this was just something different. Tyler wanted it. It was talking us into it, and actually his dad more than me. I just, whatever he wanted to try, I knew that this wasn't working at Barlow High School. And I know some people who work with folks at OYCP, and I asked how the program is. They said it's fabulous. So I was sold. And we went to the orientation, and he did a great job of talking his dad into it. He came back knowing that he wanted to try high school again. He knew that Barlow wasn't where he wanted to go. We made the transition for him to live with his dad, which was difficult for me. And I said, he wanted Job Corps. That was what Tyler wanted to do, was Job Corps. He wanted to come home and go straight to that. But he wanted to also try Sandy High School. We went that route, and we've realized in the last few weeks that Tyler's going to go to Job Corps. It's what he wanted. He knew that this wasn't the structure, that public education, but he learned that he could be successful in school being at OYCP. For me as a parent, it was the hardest thing to do, to let your baby go for 6 months and have just these little bits of time that you get to spend with them. But he came home just this amazingly strong, smart, independent man that I knew that he was, but also he had this knowledge that he could be successful. And he wanted to try, like I said, the public school system, but we realized that this isn't the route for him. I'm just so thankful for the program. He's happy. He's healthy. He enjoyed it. There was definitely times that were difficult. Some of the letters were excruciating to get. But he stuck it out, and I'm so darn proud of him, and I'm so thankful every single day that he's home, and he's not into drugs. He's not, you know, one of those bad kids. He knows what he wants, and he knows how he's going to get it, and he's making those choices, and we're here to support him. And I think it's fabulous. There's not been a person that's asked me about it that I haven't said, if you have the opportunity, do it. Go for it.
Thank you. So you tell us your story.
My name is Tyler Brewer, and when I was there, up to getting there, I was just going downhill more. I wasn't doing anything in school. And a big part of that was kind of family, because my family on my dad's side is just bad. And so I was hanging out with them too much, and it was just going downhill and worse. I wasn't rarely going to school. I would say I was, but I would just go get something, just hang out in town until school got out, and then go home. But the way I found out about the program was my counselor and my case manager, the first time with my IEP he had ever talked to me, he suggested that place, OYCP. So I went and did the orientation, and I liked it. I wanted to go there. And up to day two, I kind of had that mindset where, what am I doing here? And then after we started figuring out how everything was going, it got way easier. And once it, up to the middle point, it got to where it was really easy. And then that's when it started getting kind of harder, because everybody's getting excited to go to graduation. So it seemed like more people were making bad decisions, and everybody would get in trouble. So that's where I had kind of the hardest time, was towards the end, because it was getting up to graduation. But now that I actually did graduate, at the beginning of the school year, I was doing great. I had great grades, and I was happy that I came out of there with a 3.73 GPA, and I went in with a 0.27, and how much it jumped up, and it saved me from, I wanted to get my GED when I was there, and the principal, me and him talked, and he kind of suggested that I would talk to my parents about diploma, and I decided diploma because I wanted to go into the military. But after that, we just talked about everything, and it's just so much nicer being successful through the program.
Thank you. We're happy for you. So tell me, when other kids started having problems, how did that affect you?
It's more because we were in what was known as white stage, which wasn't quite where we would still have to, if one person got in trouble, it was mainly everybody, it seemed like. And so that was happening more, it seemed like, towards the end. And it wasn't too fun.
So if one kid in your group, or more than one kid, was getting in trouble, that affected the whole group. Is that correct?
Yes.
So how did you finally make that decision that you wanted to do this, that you wanted to go to this school?
Up to where I was in there signing every single paper. I was really nervous going up to it. And in the car, it was like dead silence. We were listening to music, but I couldn't hear anything because I was more or less thinking about it. But as we got there, I pretty much said to myself, I want to do this. I want to be successful with school.
Good for you. That's great. Any questions of either of these wonderful people? We're so happy for your time.
And thank you.
Thank you, both of you. Good luck. So you're going to go to the Job Corps now?
Yes, I am.
Fantastic. Good. Now we will hear from James Jones and Don Coombs.
This is interesting for me to go through this.
Could you give us your name, please?
My name is James Jones, or J.J. Jones is what I'm called. I'm from Corvallis, and my cadet is from Corvallis. And I don't know why he wanted to get into this program, but he was sure interested in the military end of the program. He seemed to have good grades, but he was not doing very well in school because he was doing a lot of other things. And I don't think he was a mischievous kid at all, but just didn't have things put together very well. I was very happy to have him ask me to be a mentor. And I didn't know very much about this, and I am definitely surprised of what kind of a program this is. It's a great program.
You never visited it yourself, Mr. Jones?
I'm sorry?
Did you ever go out to visit the program?
Oh, yes. As a mentor, we had to be out there at a certain period of time. And it totally impressed me. He left his junior year to go into this program. And he received enough credits to become a senior, 2012, September. So this was great. He really worked hard and really made a lot of progress. Yeah, he is now going to be graduating in June, and he has a 3.73 grade point average.
Wow. You must be very proud of him.
Excuse me. With that, I'm trying to encourage him to get into college. But he's thinking that maybe he wants to join the service. So we're still kind of bouncing this back and forth. And I'm sure that this is going to be his decision, but with that grade point average and the things that he's done, I think it would be very good for him and the country to have him into a college program. And we've talked to ROTC, and so we're still kind of working here.
And how long have you been working with him?
Well, I think he asked me January 2012, I believe it was, and then he went away to the camp, and then he graduated from the camp in June of last year, So it's been a very good experience for myself.
It sounds like it. That's wonderful. Thank you for taking that on. That's a great job. Any questions of Mr. Jones?
Question.
Yes, Representative.
Mr. Whitson. Jones, what's your background? How did you come to have this young man ask you to do this?
Well, we know part of his family, and they're Mexican, mm-hmm. and they we've just encouraged them to get into college, and we've got three of them, I think, in college or through college right now, and so we've been working with the family for okay. quite a while. Okay. And he is a cousin to these people, and I had not known him too well, but he had an uncle and a grandfather come over and talk to me with himself and ask me to become the mentor. And my background? Well, my background has been a lot in physical education. But I have been a real estate broker for 29 years. And I've been retired for about 6 years or so. So
thank you.
It looked like I got another job.
That's wonderful that you took that on. Thank you for doing that. Any further questions? Thank you so much, Mr. Jones, and I
thank
see
you.
Mrs. Jones is here too. So thank you for loaning your husband to help this young man.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you for the program.
So did your children go through Corvallis Schools? Did they?
I'm sorry?
Did your children, before you retired, did they go through the Corvallis Schools?
Oh, yes, yes.
Corvallis High or Crescent Valley?
Corvallis High.
Good job.
She is from Corvallis, you can tell that.
Yes. My kids go to Corvallis High School.
Yes, I knew that.
But we love Crescent Valley too.
Yeah.
Thank you again.
Well,
we
thank
really
you.
Appreciate it. Is there anyone else here from the program who would like to speak today? Yes, come on up, sir.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Rocky Nordone. I live in Salem, Oregon, and I'm one of the mentors in the program. I had to laugh about Patrick's comments about his interaction with the vice principal because I always said that it wasn't school I disliked, it was just the principal of the thing. I had a little interaction myself, too. But anyway, I just wanted to talk for a minute about this program and how I came to be involved in it. My young man that I'm mentoring actually contacted my church, and one of the gal who runs our office contacted me and asked me if I would be interested in mentoring. So, and I'd never done that before, so I thought, what a great opportunity. And so I made an appointment. I'm a real estate broker too, 22 years here in Salem, and I don't think they just pick real estate brokers. Anyway, I made an appointment with this young man, and he came to my office. His name is Evaristo Galicia, and he goes by Junior. His father's name was also Evaristo Galicia. And so we met at my office, and he was a small little guy, but built like a little pit bull. And I found out some of his background, that he went to Independence High School. The family moved up here from California and attended school there. And he actually was the state wrestling champion for his sophomore and junior year. He won the at 103 pounds, he was the state champion. And I thought that was pretty impressive. shortly after his junior year, his father passed away. And that's what kind of put the kid into a tailspin, and it really affected him badly. And so he kind of went downhill pretty quick, and he actually dropped out of school, didn't graduate. So anyway, he had lost interest pretty much in anything. And honestly, I'm not really sure how he found out about this program, but after I've been with him, I'm glad that the name of the program has the word challenge in it, because I think if it didn't, he probably wouldn't have been interested in the program. But he's a competitive young man. He's very quiet and unassuming, but you could see that he had a certain amount of competitive nature in him. Anyway, I think this program was awesome for him, and he did really well in the program. This program has a very structured nature, and it teaches discipline, it teaches teamwork, pride, leadership, and instills self-confidence in the students. And my mentee had some of these in his character already with his athletic background, and I was really proud that they made him platoon leader when he was there, so that was kind of cool. So after graduating in December, he has been looking for a job and recently got a job at an assisted living and active adult center. And as luck would have it, the facility is right across the street from where he lives. Mm-hmm. So that was really good. As a mentor in this program, I'm asked to spend at least 4 hours a month, either in person or on the telephone. He likes texting, which I'm not a big, you know, tech guy, but I struggle through it. And this last Monday, we were together and having lunch, and I said, Junior, I said, so tell me about this new job. I said, do you like it? And he goes, yeah. He says, I love it. He says, especially getting paid twice a month. So I said, well, what do you do there? And he said, well, he says, I do laundry, I fold towels, I clean apartments, and I work security at night. And he said, the cool thing is, it's really easy, because he says, it's the same stuff I was doing at the program. They taught him how to do things very well. He confided in me that he recently was taken aside by his new boss, who complimented him on the way he does his job. And he said, Junior, he says, you actually do the stuff in 2 hours where the former person took five. So I was pretty proud of that. Anyway, he's working now. He aspires to go on to community college. He did graduate. He got his diploma through the program, and he's back on track. He wants to go to college, but right now they've got him working 6 days a week in split shifts. So if that calms down at some point and he gets more in a regular schedule, he'll look at doing that. You know, our youth today are at such risk. And you know, I think for him particularly, this program was a perfect fit for him. And I'm so thankful for the Youth Challenge Program. And I know that he'll carry the principles, the disciplines, pride, and self-confidence that he learned through the program with him for the rest of his life. And I'm also grateful for the opportunity to share this with you folks today. And I'm grateful to the Oregon National Guard for this wonderful program that helps these kids that are at risk. But the person who's the most grateful today is a young man named Junior Galicia. I thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Nardone. Any questions? Representative Gilliam.
Sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I thank you so much for that story. Even though Junior's not here, I felt like I know a little bit about him. I just really wanted to comment to the Chair. First of all, thank you for having this informational hearing so we can hear. But the mentoring program is completely astonishing to me and wonderful. And I just wanted to point out, Madam Chair, that the permissive volunteer part of people hooking up is wonderful. Mm-hmm. As you recall, you were mandated to be my mentee.
Yes.
And it didn't work out very well.
You know, the one thing I'd like to say is that I'm not sure what this young man is going to get out of me being his mentor. You know, I just try to be an example to him, to be there for him if he needs direction or some kind of guidance, and basically just to be his friend. And in all honesty, I'm probably getting more out of it than he is.
Well said.
Any other questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you know, I was thinking as I was listening to this, that I bet any of us would be willing to be a mentor. And it sounds like some people are family, friends, or have some connection. But I would hope that you would ask some of the legislators if you don't have any mentors for students who need them after graduation, or maybe it's when they're in the program, that you would ask legislators. I think we would really enjoy that. I'm speaking for myself, but I see nods. Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question about, does it run year-round? Because some of us also may want to go visit it in person.
Oh, yes. I did that, and I was going to suggest that we do that. Uh-huh. And also, National Guard will fly you over there.
Oh.
At least they did for me, and it was a great trip. Seeing that program is so, I mean, it's wonderful seeing the video. It's wonderful hearing from the students and families. But being there is an entirely wonderful experience.
We employ approximately 50 full-time staff year-round. We run two classes. The first class starts in January and graduates in June. The second class starts in July, graduates in December. Mm-hmm. And between classes, we're doing training and fixing up our facility to take on the next class.
Mm-hmm. And you'll want to go there when the students are there. Representative Whitsitt.
So per student, per year, what is the cost that the state of Oregon contributes to this program?
Right now it costs $19,400 per student, and that's broke down 75-25 with federal government state government, so it's about $4,800, $4,500 for the state of Oregon.
Real bargain.
For a fabulous outcome.
And most of that's coming out of other funds and school support and national school lunch money, so very small piece coming out of general fund.
Yes, you want to say?
Well, I just, Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, we'd certainly love to take any and all of you over there to visit. We make those trips, you know, typically every class we invite folks over, and we do fly you over there, and it typically starts out at about 8 o'clock here in Salem, and you're back by about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We just had a group of legislators, Ways and Means folks, when they were, and the good Senator Whitsitt was in that group, and there were other senators and representatives who attended the Ways and Means hearing over there, and they also took in about 2.5-3 hours of the Youth Challenge program to get a feel for it. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly available anytime, any place. We appreciate anybody that wants to stand up and be a mentor, because like we said, we get kids from all 36 counties. Mm-hmm. And we're never real certain what the application pool is going to be. I mean, Dan may have mentioned it, but we get around 300 to 350 applicants every class. We can seat 156. So mm-hmm. That's it. So we do the best we can with what the resources we have. But there is we don't advertise. Now, we're online, we do outreach to schools, but we don't have an aggressive outreach program because, frankly, we don't need it. So,
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That really begs the question, if you could grow, what would you think your optimum growth, if the resources weren't a problem?
Madam Chair, Representative Geyer, right now we're classified at the National Guard Bureau at 130 is our goal at the National Guard Bureau. That's what they fund us for. There's increments 150, 175, 200, 225. Mm-hmm. Where we've looked at plans to grow out about another 55 or 60 kids, but we don't have the plant to do that. We just don't have the room. The facility we have was, like I said, a former DOD facility during the Cold War. It's about 64,000 square feet, or one big block building. does everything we need, but and we have some interest from the Ways and Means folks that were out there to shoot some numbers at them to see what the capital would be, because the federal government won't supply capital dollars. Mm-hmm. These are typically in the other 35 states that have these. These are typically in a place like what we have, Camp Riley, over on the Oregon coast, where you've got a lot of facilities. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case how this thing came together, and so we're limited by that space. And when you're in one of our camps, you've got more growth capability, but certainly we're limited. And the cost is probably going to cost somewhere around $5 million to do the repairs that we would need to do with the capital construction in that facility to grow the program. We would then go to what, 225?
225 with a graduation target of 175 cadets each class. Wow.
Great. So that would be, that's the impediment right now to growth. The Bureau has indicated that they've got funding, National Guard Bureau has, they've got funding to supply the 75%. And with ADM growth, of course, you get ADM money, so it would grow, probably the general fund would probably grow another $100,000 by any $350,000, $400,000, just rough numbers. So.
Any questions of either of these wonderful gentlemen?
Again, we really appreciate the opportunity to come over here and showcase what we believe is the best program in the nation. So.
That's what the awards say, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Hey, yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you all who came to testify today, and best wishes to the families and the young men who have been here and been so successful in those programs. Thank you for coming. And for the mentors, obviously, also. Thank you. Now we're going to open up the Mental Health Care Coordination Services, and we're going to be hearing from people at Tiger Tualatin School District and a Mental Health Coordinator Program and Child and Family Services LifeWorks. Maybe we can. Just before you speak, if you would give us your name, that would be terrific.
Certainly. I'm Susan Salkiel, Safe Schools, Healthy Students Project Director, Tiger Tualatin School District. And these are my co-presenters, Pam Sturdivant, who's supervisor of our care coordination team, and Courtney Town, who is Director of Child and Family Mental Health Services for LifeWorks Northwest. Great. And we're going to be tag-teaming a bit.
Okay, terrific.
We know that almost half of lifetime mental health disorders start before the age of 14. In any given classroom of 30 children, at least three of them will be struggling with a mental health problem that's significant enough to be interfering with their ability to focus, concentrate, and learn. We also know that only one of these three children is likely to receive mental health treatment. For minority children, this number is 1 in 6. In elementary school, children with mental health problems are more likely to be doing poorly in school, to be absent, to be suspended, and to be expelled. By the time they reach high school, these problems are magnified, and students with mental health problems are over 3 times more likely to be absent and over 3 times as likely to be suspended and expelled. They're also much less likely to graduate from high school. The dropout rate's much higher. Up to 44% of students with mental health problems don't graduate from high school. So we're here today to talk about mental health care coordination, which is a program that's been implemented in Tiger Tualatin School District that works with school staff, teachers, and school teams to identify students in need of potential mental health services and work with the students and families to connect them with mental health services. And we thought we'd start by sharing a video that we developed a couple months ago to update our school board.
Hi, I'm Pam Sturdivant. I am the program manager and a bilingual care coordinator for the care coordination team. And I would like to take a few minutes to tell you a little bit about the program and why it is such a vital component of academic success for students in the Tyra Tualatin School District. The job of a care coordinator is to link a student and their family to mental health supports outside of the school setting that's going to support the child when they are in the school. So oftentimes, we will meet with the family and learn that the child has experienced some form of trauma, or the family may be going through a very significant event that's impacting that child's capacity to focus and learn at school. So we work with the family, we'll help them navigate through any kind of insurance questions that they have, and find a provider in their area that has a specialty in the area of need. When a student is not making the anticipated gains, oftentimes a care coordination referral will come to us. At that point, the care coordinator will work with the school counselor, learning specialists, others who know that student well, and will then make that connection to the family to try and figure out what's going on outside of the school setting and how can we utilize services outside of the school setting that are going to have a direct impact on that student's functioning when they are back in school.
It's hard, right, if you have a lot of stuff going on at home, a lot of distractions in your life. And some of these students, whether it's grief, whether it's anger, whether it's confusion about divorce, blended families, trying to figure out where you fit in. If you're distracted and you're confused about where you are in life, it's really hard to focus on reading or writing or math and really stay engaged. And so care coordination allows the students to have, you know, that outlet when they need it. At an appropriate time so that when they're here, they don't need to think about those things. They will have that time with that person, and that's something that they can count on a regular basis. And so
it's made a huge difference. We've had families get out of abusive situations. We've had families who've had just so much strife and conflict and fighting at home go through the family coaching and in the anger management sessions.
And what the program allows us to do is to help mold their academic program and social programs to be successful here in school. And so we've seen that direct impact on how they learn, what they're able to learn, and get them back to a place where they're meeting benchmarks and also being able to be successful alongside their peers.
It turned out that we had a student whose older sibling was involved in gang activity. And so our care coordinator suggested, let's get someone for him to talk to on a regular basis and kind of have as an outlet in the community and to connect him with some positive community resources. And through that work, we received very good news, even now a year later, that our student is on track, not skipping school, and he's now in middle school and right on track doing what he needs to do, and he's got that positive community connection.
And we look at the very tip of our triangle, so we speak, our top 2-3% of our high flyer kids that aren't performing, aren't attending, having issues. What are the issues? They're the red zone kids. And oftentimes it's school avoidance, it's mental health issues, it's depression, it may be family problems that are causing the student to stay home. And so that's kind of a safety net, and we never used to have a care coordinator to ask for help.
Really need mental health support. And I remember how it was before we had this program. And really there was a question mark, what do we do with these kids? How can we help these kids? Who can serve them? And for counselors and psychologists trying to build the knowledge base about what's available in the community and how you kind of navigate systems and then how you work with insurance and how you work with families, they don't have the time. They just don't have the time to do that. So I see it as vitally important.
I remember one of the kids from one of the high schools that definitely was involved in a lot of substance abuse, of substances, like I said, that have been proven to be lethal. We have been able to get them immediately through services. And the good thing is that some of these agencies are able to provide treatment for no cost, so that doesn't turn into a burden, a financial burden for the family. And he was connected, started treatment, started to show progress in treatment, and definitely completed successfully his treatment, as well as being able to graduate from high school.
Of course, it was like many educators can share a story like this, perfect storm, like days before an extended break. This student came to me and shared that she was considering ending her own life. And here I was, basically hours away from school closing for an extended period, knowing the student wasn't in the care, the student very fearful about contacting her parents about her situation. And I was able to access Renee and build a plan for the student that allowed me to know that beyond the end of the last day of school before the break, that this parent, the parents were going to be involved, the student was going to get mental health care support, and there was going to be a safety plan in place that would make the student feel supported.
There are students who have been referred to care coordination who've had so many traumatic events in their lives. Maybe it's been a DHS placement. Maybe they are students who have been struggling with addictions. They may have an open case with the juvenile department. Maybe they have some community violations. And when those students get the support they need, it impacts the tone of the whole classroom.
Not just they're affecting their own schooling, they're affecting the schooling of other students. So you see it every time. You see that when the family gets help, the student comes in, they don't have the anxiety, they don't have the pressure of, say, stuff that's going on at home. If the program wasn't there for our kids, there would be a real hole in what we would be able to do for families and for our students. We can do only so much, and to have a resource like our care coordination, it allows us to branch out and really provide really the resources that we were never able to provide in the past, that are at a level of service that make a difference for kids.
I don't know what we did before, and I don't know what we'll do if it goes away. It's a big deal.
I'll pass you on to Pam now.
Thank you. I'm Pam Sturtevant, and I would like to just explain in greater detail how the process of mental health care coordination works. Students with potential mental health issues are often first identified by their classroom teachers. The care coordinators do trainings at the start of the school year to help alert the staff in what kinds of red flags might be indicating an underlying mental health problem. We have what are called red zone teams established at every school. That's across a multidisciplinary team that consists of the administrators, school counselors, school psychologists, often learning specialists, those that are in the trenches day to day and working with students. We meet on a regular basis as a red zone team and discuss those students that have the highest needs in the school. Oftentimes they have a lot of behavioral referrals or a lot of extensive absences. Or it may be a student that the staff is just really concerned about because they seem so depressed or so anxious. So then we also have found that parents will come to the school at times asking for help, saying, I'm really concerned about Johnny. And that would also be another opportunity to get referred for care coordination. So once the care coordinator is involved, we meet with the student and their family. We do a mental health screening to try and clarify what the clinical issues are, and then work to link them to an appropriate mental health support. We work with families, and many times they are aware that there's a significant issue, and sometimes they're not. And it's an opportunity for us to get the school and the family and the outside mental health provider all working together in a collaborative way to support a student. We have families with all kinds of insurance situations. Some of our families have private insurance. Many are on the Oregon Health Plan. Some have no insurance whatsoever. And that is never a barrier. We are always able to find a support that will help those students receive mental health services. We have found over time that when families get linked to services, sometimes they don't know how to advocate for more intensive help. And so we will work with families when they are finding that the student is not making the gains that they need to be making. We've had to facilitate hospitalizations for students that are in crisis. And then when they are discharged, help form a plan to get them back into school. So we find that when we get the family and the school and the mental health provider coordinating that care, it goes so much more smoothly. We get releases of information signed so that this communication can happen in a really smooth fashion. And what we have found is that when that communication piece happens and the student gets what they need, we are then able to close out our case for care coordination. We've served over 330 children this year alone with care coordination out of a staff of 4 care coordinators. So we are a very active group and work with families in the school, or we will also go out into the community and meet families in their homes. We really do everything possible to reduce any barriers.
So is this elementary, middle, and high school students, all students?
Correct.
12?
Yes.
And where are you housed?
We are housed primarily in the 3 middle schools. So 3 of us are in middle schools, and 1 is at a high school. We find that mental health issues affect students across the age span, but it's often in those middle years that they really rise to the top. So by being present in the school building, we have found it easier to integrate into the school setting and work with all of the schools.
Great. Thank you. We'll have more questions at the end, because I think I have a lot of questions, so we'll wait and let
Thank you. All right. Chairwoman, Representative Tomei, thank you so much, committee members, for wanting to hear more about the school-based care coordination program. My name is Courtney Town, and as Susan mentioned, I'm the Director of Child and Family Services at LifeWorks Northwest, and the care coordination program is just one of many that I have the privilege of being a part of and helping to oversee, and something that's really easy for me to get up here and cheerlead about. Because I work in a lot of different kinds of programs in 3 counties in the Portland metro area, I interface a lot with our other community system partners, sit on a lot of advisory boards, contribute to a lot of thinking around how do we get the most bang for our proverbial buck in terms of intervention, and really always interested in looking at effective models that will link behavioral health care with schools, with child welfare, with primary care. And this program is a really similar model to a lot of the discussion that's happening in the health field around hotspotting. Really, what's a good process, an efficient way of identifying using data are the folks we're most concerned about. And this program looks at that from a school lens of what students are we most concerned about by using information around truancy, disciplinary referrals, and then just teacher concern and regard. We really have implemented a system where there's a process now for folks in schools to be able to trust that something's going to happen when they have those concerns that's reliable and that's predictable and it's efficient. We've got a team, as Pam said, of 3 folks, or 4 folks, not all full-time, serving that many students every year in a really efficient way, getting them linked into services that make a difference and then get back to school. It is a program model that really, really works. And having worked, I could spend like 3 days telling you about programs I've been a part of that don't work. And it's never because of poor intention or people that don't want to see it happen or don't want to see this, you know, these barriers break down between our system sometimes. But the reality is, we saw in the video, people are really, really busy in their own systems and their own processes with their own mandates. And it's sometimes really challenging to be able to cross between behavioral health providers and school personnel. And this gives a path and a clear process to realize how to do that and do it, as I said, predictably. It's an incredible return on investment, I think, in terms of the outcomes that we get and the success we're seeing in students in a much more universal approach. I was really struck by all the testimony you just heard prior to our presentation about the profiles of the youth that they presented. And my hope is that programs like this one make it possible for programs like that to not have a wait list, to really make sure that fewer and fewer youth end up disenfranchised from school, feeling like they don't have a place in the classroom and they don't have access to the resources that they need. And the earlier we can intervene, and this is the beauty of this program, that we are working with all the schools within the district, we're really educating folks in buildings, you know, everyone, not just our teachers, but the front desk folks, the office staff, the nurses, the janitorial crew, to reduce stigma and not be afraid to ask questions about what mental health looks like, and then know that they have a process when they have a concern, that they can hand it off to someone who's going to pick up that ball and make sure that that student's going to get connected and linked. So just happy to answer questions, but Pam's going to give you a few more examples about some specifics of a few case scenarios.
Thank you, Courtney. I'd like to give you a couple of case examples. The identifying information has been changed to protect the confidentiality of these students. The first one I want to talk about is Joe. He is an elementary student, and his dad died last year. His teachers were noting a lack of interest in school. He was more socially isolated and had just a low level of energy. He would just put his head on his desk a lot during the day. So when the care coordinator met with the parent, it became apparent that both the mother and the child were suffering from pretty significant depression. And as is often the case when people are at a time of distress, this parent had a list of providers from her insurance company, but didn't know where to begin and didn't know who would have a specialty in knowing how to treat their situation. And so the care coordinator was able to link both the parent and the child to a clinician in the area that specializes in grief and loss. Joe's making good progress, getting through the trauma and the sadness. The care coordinator also made a referral to the Big Brothers Big Sister program, so now Joe meets regularly with a mentor who can invest in him and be a positive male role model in his life. My second case example is a student that I will call Marissa. She's a high school student who has a history with DHS due to previous physical abuse by her father. Up until this year, she was academically progressing and on scheduled to graduate on time. However, this fall, she got involved in a dating relationship with Mark, and it's a relationship that became very violent. And it really changed her life dramatically. Her school attendance went down, and her grades were really suffering. And it was rumored that she was also using drugs. So she got referred for care coordination, and the care coordinator met with Marissa and her mother to connect her to a mental health provider with training in domestic violence issues. The police were involved in this case because of the criminal activity, and so there was a no-contact order in place between the two students. However, they attended the same high school. So it was important for the care coordinator to facilitate a team meeting with the family, the mental health provider who now knows the student, and the school to put together a safety plan and figure out how they can address any kind of concerns around that. Mark is now in treatment for anger management and adhering to the requirements that have been put in place by the juvenile department. And Marissa is making progress dealing with her trauma history and learning how to make healthier decisions moving forward in her life.
Our district was lucky enough to receive a Safe Schools, Healthy Students federal grant, which enabled us to develop this program. It also enabled us to rigorously evaluate it, and we wanted to share some of the results of that evaluation with you. We've looked at groups of students who were served by care coordination and tracked their progress from the semester that they were referred over the next 2 and 3 semesters on the theory that improvements in mental health status don't dramatically result in changes in school function, but they accumulate over time, and that over that period of time we should be able to see a real difference. And you have an information sheet in front of you where we've tracked one particular group of students. As you can see, for this group of students, office disciplinary referrals dropped dramatically. Suspensions per students dropped dramatically. This was from semester of referral to 3 semesters out. And the one that we were most pleased about, the percent of students passing all classes doubled. As you can see, when these students entered mental health care coordination, only 22% were passing all of their classes. At the end of 3 semesters, 44% were. Now, while this number still troubles us, we were really delighted to see 100% improvement
and expect that these students will evidence further improvements as they go along. In addition to the benefits for individual students, there are benefits for our whole district. Mental health care coordination improves school climate because it enables us to address the problems of kids who are disruptive, and it also enables us to address the issues of kids who are disengaged or withdrawn or depressed, who also affect other students in their classroom. We also believe that it makes our schools much safer because it addresses problems early and prevents school tragedies such as student suicide. And we know from our student wellness survey information that 16% of 11th graders in our district have seriously considered suicide at least once in their lives. And at the time that they do, it's really important to get them connected with services quickly. And mental health care coordination helps enable us to do this. Now, our grant is ending this year, and our district is really struggling to maintain this service. And it's struggling hard because it's a very, very important service. And we're optimistic that we'll be able to maintain it next year. The difficulty for a district is that it becomes a choice between caring for student mental health and balancing kindergarten class sizes. And those are terrible decisions for any district to have to make. One of the issues is that this service isn't reimbursable under third-party insurance or the Oregon Health Plan, the service of care coordination itself, because it's a pre-treatment service. If it was an outpatient service, it would be billable by either the school district or LifeWorks, but because it happens before the outpatient phase, it's not billable and therefore not reimbursable. And yet we know that without this service, that two-thirds of the 350 students referred per year wouldn't receive mental health services, or if they did, they'd receive them way too late. So one of the bright spots for us is Senate Bill 823, which has provision for school mental health services and specifically mentions an increase in the capacity of school mental health services, training and assisting education staff in screening and early identification, and providing consultation and support to students. And these are the elements that have really enabled our program to effectively help students to get back on track. So we were very encouraged to see this bill, and certainly hope that it passes. So at this point, we want to thank you so much for giving us this opportunity, and we'd be happy to provide any further information that we can.
Thank you so much. Representative Gallegos.
Yeah, thank you for your presentation. I also sit on Higher Education Committee, and obviously we look at the whole issue of education. So several other of the folks on the panel up here right now are on that committee. And one of the things that I'm aware of is that up until the 80s, we had school social workers that did a lot of this work. And they were declassified. They were supported by the state. But we declassified and got rid of those positions, and we replaced those with behavior management specialists who, again, if you've been in a classroom in the last 10 years, you know how chaotic those classrooms are. And I really believe that that's one of the indices of our failure in our school system in the state, is that we move to expecting teachers to be behavior management specialists and as well as teachers, and they're not trained to do that. So I think that's one of our big problems. And I'm aware that I can see where your program really does fill a need. But I'm curious about. I'm aware that the teachers board has. Okayed or implemented a licensing of school social workers again. I know that Portland State with their MSW program has developing a curriculum for school social work. How is your program positioned with that effort, that workforce effort, to sort of rebuild this sort of capacity within schools? And the second part of my question is, Do you foresee us moving statewide toward, and maybe this Senate Bill 823 is a movement in that direction, but I guess what I'm hopeful and what I'm asking you is will we see a return then of this kind of service statewide?
First question first, and Courtney, you may want to weigh in on this as well. Our district doesn't have any plans to return to school social work positions. We very much wish that they did, and it's not certainly from any kind of lack of interest or commitment on the part of the district. But one way that we do use social workers very much in a school context is Tigard High School has a school-based health center that has a behavioral health therapist on staff who is a social worker, and she's also a life work staff and really functions kind of in that role. And we will be opening year after next another school-based health center at Tualatin High School, which will also have a social worker, which will be working in a really similar role. So in that way, we're hoping to fill some of the void that, as you rightly mentioned, has really been missed by eliminating those positions. Courtney, do you want to talk about the model?
Well, I'm actually not aware or familiar with what you're referencing in terms of the planning that may be going on around social workers to get back into schools, but I would certainly agree that that's a big missing piece that's really been lacking in terms of someone in the building that has the time and the responsibility to attend to these very concerns that we're describing. And I would just suggest that however it's happening, wherever it's happening, that it look like this model. And whether that's, you know, a better push statewide to look at the relicensing of school social workers and to define what that role is. I think this is a really effective model as well. I do know in other states that I've worked in and been in, school social workers often are very much entrenched within the politics of the building and the mandates of, you know, the education in the district, obviously. That's their employer. And I do want to point out that this model, I think, is a little bit unique and different in that it has really leveraged a community partnership between county mental health, you know, local provider systems, and the school, and that we've all got some skin in the game in coordinating in a way that is a little bit different than models I've seen with school social workers, where they're really not as connected in a systems approach to being able to affect change. And by that, in our county, County Mental Health, we have a school liaison that's an employee of the County Mental Health, and her role is to bring together the care coordination team across some different districts, and sadly ours may be the only team next year to convene, and to really talk about at a systems level what are the barriers to access to treatment. And then you've got the person that's funding the providers saying, wait a minute, access isn't going well. I'm hearing from the care coordination team that it's taking too long to get kids in, and we're problem solving those kinds of discussions. And in my experience of working with school social workers, like I said, in previous iterations, and I'm not familiar with what the current plans are, that's something that I think has been limiting. And one of the examples, when I referenced earlier, I've seen a lot of things that are well-intentioned not have the kind of impact that I think this program has the potential, the way that it's been structured, to really impact. But we need these folks in the building, whatever way that happens.
Follow up. And you mentioned that this, your grant's running out. What is the source of that grant?
It's a federal Safe Schools, Healthy Students grant, and that's a grant to reduce violence, reduce alcohol and drug use, and improve access to mental health services in schools through community partnerships.
I'm assuming you've been able to prove that that's the case. It has made the school safer and less use of drugs and alcohol, right?
Yes.
So isn't the idea, I would think, of these federal grants, is the idea is to have a demonstration project and then hopefully then expand it across the state. Am I correct in that?
Yes.
So what is the progress on that endeavor?
I think it's us talking to you today. the Hillsborough School District actually had the same grant a couple years ahead of Tigard Tualatin's grant award, and they successfully implemented a care coordination team that we just basically were smart enough to ask them how to do it and had the good fortune of having them go first and be able to really pick their brains and learn from their wisdom. And we learned a lot from that first project and how that went. At the ending of that grant, the Hillsborough School District decided to employ the care coordination team, although they were not able to keep it funded at the level of of staffing that the grant had supported, but they did retain about half of that team to continue in that work that had become so embedded within the schools and so relied on by all the administrators and educators. And I don't know anything is definite yet, but I do know this very year that they're concerned that they're not going to be able to continue funding for those care coordinators next year. Beaverton School District also made a change in folks they had in their district and their roles, moving them from prevention specialists, having seen the outcomes of a program model like this, and trying to figure out how to leverage the most resources, the most bang for their buck. And they had been working collaboratively the last year and a half with the other care coordination teams to transition their prevention specialists into more of a role of a care coordinator. I've also heard, although I don't think anything's official, that they're very vulnerable and unlikely to be continued next school year. So these are the challenges, and this is, absolutely the federal funding is to say, hey, here's the startup money, and then find a way to make it sustainable. And it's everyone's best interest to figure out a way to make it sustainable, and unfortunately, we haven't been able to see that happen for our school districts yet in Washington County. But it is such a significant need, and I think such a model worth investing in, that we're just hopeful and enjoy the opportunity to talk to whoever's interested in hearing about it and thinking about it, what this model really can deliver.
In our district, the district is trying very hard to make a commitment to continue the program next year, and we're very hopeful about that. And County Mental Health believes it's important enough that they've found one-time only funds to dedicate as matching funds next year. So we believe that we'll be able to operate the service at least another year.
So your federal grant is ending. Mm-hmm. I remember that. So tell me what kind of money we're looking at for a biennium program, two-year program.
The cost of a one-year program is in total about $185,000 for 3.5 staff and excellent clinical supervision and good support from both LifeWorks and County Mental Health.
So
it works out to about $600 a case.
And then we'll speak a little bit to that model also. I mean, one of the things that they learned from the Hillsborough contract, the time that Hillsborough School District was awarded their Safe Schools, Healthy Students contract, they had the Washington County Mental Health Agency contract directly to be the provider of those care coordination services until the time that the Hillsborough District took on the oversight and made those district employees. When it came time for Tiger Tualatin's grant, they made the decision, I think wisely, again looking at more bang for the buck, of deciding to contract that out to a provider, a nonprofit provider. And I'd be happy to come back and talk to you in another session about the reason why. We're cheaper. They realized that they had a lot more flexibility and that it's, frankly, lower cost to have staff through a nonprofit mental health provider do the care coordination work rather than having either school district employees and or county employees in these same roles. And so that was one of the ways that we're able to, this is a really bare bones budget, $185,000 for 3.5 folks to work really tirelessly all year long serving that many kids and getting good outcomes. Again, I think that's why I'm so happy to talk about return on investment there as a universal approach to affect a lot of lives. This is the 330 kids that actually ended up in care coordination. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of other students that they were able to provide consultation around and do enough to give support to other folks in buildings where they didn't need to get that referral, where they didn't need to get so engaged in care coordination, where it was a simple phone call to make a referral that didn't involve more assessment. So they touched the lives of many, many more students than the 330 that ended up in care coordination.
Representative Gallegos.
So, have you made a proposal to the Hillsborough School District?
No. County Mental Health is really working actively, I know, and they're very invested in this model, and they're talking constantly to the Hillsborough School District.
No.
And the other, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize. I was in another committee testifying on a bill, so if I missed anything here, but. I have a background in Commission on Children and Families, and I have a good relationship with my mental health county director here. I don't understand, under the new health care and education model that we're going to be facing, who's going to do this? Who's going to look at? Who's going to advocate? How's this money going to be granted? Is it going to be ELC? Is it going to be UDC? Is it going to be OEIB? Who's going to do this? Mm-hmm. Who are you looking to support your request?
I think that's a really good question. I don't know that I figured out the answer to that yet.
I don't either.
I think it's an investment that all of those folks have a stake in. I really do. Between the Early Learning Council, between the Department of Education, between county general funds, wherever it comes from, maybe all of the above, I think this is a good model that affects all of those different
perspectives. I'm a big supporter of school myself. I mean, in Lapine we have one, in Redmond we have one, and some of my colleagues, Republicans don't like it, but in the communities we've eliminated some issues that they don't want to address for the be sure that the school by self and us, and I visited them, and they're great to provide service, and they can have a mental counselor, but I just really don't know. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here, and I don't know who's going to be in charge of supporting these and making these decisions and funding this stuff. I know we've got a bunch of people we've hired to be the bosses, but I don't see any workers or service deliverers.
In Washington County, our Commission on Children and Families has taken a real leadership role in children's mental health, and particularly in the development of school-based health centers, and we wouldn't be where we were today without them.
Any further questions or comments? Thank you so much. This is a fantastic program, and I hope next year when we reconvene, or in 2 years, you're going to come back to us and tell us how wonderful the last 2 years have been. So thank you so much. It's a great program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we will close the informational hearing, and we will close the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. And thank you all, committee.